ceasefire proposal in late December,
particularly the influence of the Americans on the turndown by Olmert and the Israeli government. Can you tell me whether, for a moment there, it looked like he was going to accept it? What was the influence of the American government on the decision?
Ceasefire between Hamas and Israel?
Yes, so that would have made the rockets ceasefire.
Yeah.
You remember the...
Yes. Okay, there is an ongoing debate inside the Israeli establishment, politicians and agencies, whether Israel should go and have negotiation on total ceasefire, complete ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. There are two arguments against it. One is that a precondition of Hamas is, okay, Israel will stop all its hold all its operations in the West Bank as well, because Gaza Strip and West Bank are one unit, 67 territories. Israel is unwilling. It is against the Israeli strategy of the unilateral withdrawal from Gaza, evacuating settlements from Gaza and going on in business as usual in the West Bank. Second, it will legitimize Hamas in a way. And here, United States, senior Fatah members are very unhappy and they don't want it to happen. And the cooperation here is based on let's delete, kick out Hamas and go back. In my way, there is no option to go back to a single party political establishment, the Fatah. The elections of 06 dramatically changed it. It's a big partisan system built in. Now we have to hold that and give carrots to Hamas to come towards us and convince our Palestinian colleagues of Fatah that's it. You have to face the reality and you are in charge of partly of what happened.
Menachem, hi. I wanted to ask you about borders. Geneva, you talked about the principles that Geneva was based on. One of them was the compromises are between 67 and 48, and it's basically the 100% principle that there's going to be one-to-one land swaps up to 2%. Those are pretty big assumptions, and I'm wondering, I will read your book, I promise, I'm wondering to what extent that was debated within the group coming to that as the basis, and to what extent you think that has been embraced moving forward, because that wasn't in the Clinton parameters. And even now, when the Bush administration talks about land swaps, there isn't the explicit one-to-one, which I think a lot of us believe is a basic precondition to solving the borders element of this issue.
Okay, thank you very much for reminding me the one-to-one proportion, okay, which is also very, very important thing. On the principles that I mentioned that you asked about, we had a debate, we had a debate on how to form up the refugee concession by the Palestinians. And the longest debate that we had, almost all along 2 years, was the border line. Where exactly the line will go, and I describe it in the book, including the all crisis that we went through. See, it is the first time that Israelis and Palestinians agreed on a map or used the same software and aerial photos. In no negotiation meeting, the sides in Camp David or in Taba used the same software, the same aerial photo, and they never agreed on a border line. Now, the conflicts were on almost every meter of the border, where exactly the border should run, because which interest will override? The interest of the settlement that remain Israeli and annexed to Israel, or the interest of the local people, and how we compromise that on the map, on the road, and in Jerusalem in particular, because It is very important. It is one urban unit. We went out to the field, to the street, as a team. And together on field we decided, okay, here we can build the bridge here, we will draw it with the laptop. We went out. In some places our compromise is worse. Cannot work. It's not good. But we needed to conclude something in order to produce an agreement. And then hoping that in the real game the negotiators will do much better or call us perhaps or something. Because we could not go anywhere further, and we needed the agreement, and we bear in our mind the following. If we fail, now if we succeed, fine. But what will happen if we fail? Immediately, everyone will say, oh, those leftist pisniks cannot agree, never there will be an agreement. Yeah. So just and regarding the one-to-one proportion, if the Israelis want to keep great portion of the West Bank, they will never agree to one-to-one proportion. Ehud Barak went to Camp David, not agreeing to the principle of land swap, because his map was holding 60%. At the first map, holding 60% of the territories. And by the way, he never defined what a settlement is. Never Israel made a decision what and the Prime Minister decided what a settlement is. The build-up area, the planning and zoning, the municipal territory, and so on. There are different scales with different implications in negotiation. We agreed from the beginning, build-up area plus 500 meters. That's it. And this gave us the option to agree on one-to-one proportion. Otherwise, we could not. And in Taba, after heavy pressure of Clinton, when Barak, for the first time, delivered a map of annexing to Israel between 6 to 8% of the West Bank, then he agreed to 2-to-1 proportions of land swap. But we must agree on 1-to-1, and then this automatically will minimize the territory annexed to Israel.
You began by explaining what the original agreements had to be in order for there to be a negotiation. How the Israeli side must agree to divide Jerusalem, must agree to talk on the basis of the 1967 border, and the Palestinians must see that they could not persist with the right of return. You did not mention the necessity for Israel to acknowledge responsibility for the departure of the refugees. I thought that was generally believed to be a sine qua non for a political agreement on the part of the Palestinians to forego the right of return, that Israel would have to admit its responsibility. Was that discussed?
Yes, it was discussed. It was discussed in Taba. It is in the in the Geneva, that Israel regret or acknowledge its responsibility among others, its share in the creation of the 48. That's not a, okay. At the moment, it is not a major problem for us, okay, for the negotiators. But the question is, okay, then what? Okay, we Israel or the Palestinians say, okay, you acknowledge, then what? So if the then is implement the right of return, if we're here we have a problem. But it will be, it must be part of any final status agreement. Some Israelis argue, okay, we acknowledge and that's the end of. We are very sorry, no single return to the state of Israel. Even in the left there are many that they say that. We acknowledge, we regret, we made many, many war crimes and destroyed and so on, but no one will return. Because this violates our very existence and so on. Now, our problem, and let me add here, our problem, I mean our Israelis and Palestinians, that we do not open a rational public debate regarding the refugees. We are hostages of our myth that one single Palestinian returnee will destroy the existence of Israel or crack down the right of Israel to exist. Okay? Even one or ten or and so on. It will be catastrophe. Or, on the Palestinian side, they are stick to the principle of the right of return, but nobody asks, very few say, okay, assuming I'm Israeli, okay, let's go ahead, let's play with that. You want to return? Go ahead to where you want to return. Your city does not exist there. The street is not there. The society totally destroyed and is not there. Show me where exactly you want. At the same house, 100 meters away, 2 kilometers away, to the historical land. What do you mean by that? Be practical. I acknowledge, I let you, big numbers and so on. Okay, let's play with that. Just tell me, choose. No, nothing. They are stick to the principle, and Israelis are sticks to deny the principle, and we are, going nowhere. And what is needed is actually the public debate in each side in order to pave the way. But for that, we need the leaders to re-energize the final status talks, the principles of a final status talks. Will create a debate? Definitely. Now, I will say two issues that I would like to address you. A political agreement is just a political agreement. It is not a compromise over holiness or rewriting our history books. So if I say that Jerusalem or Haram al-Sharif will be under Palestinian sovereignty, it does not mean that it stopped to be a Jewish holy place. It was a holy place under Ottomans and Byzantines and Jordanians. It will remain holy in Judaism, also under the state of Palestine. As same as Al-Burak, the Wailing Wall, is holy in Islam. No Israeli annexation law can take the holiness from Islam. Very clear. But a political agreement is a political contract between legal document between states. Who will give the permission to go where and who manage which unit of territory? That's it. Much of history and religion is brought in to support sovereignty claims. Government has no authority to decide on holiness. Government has full authority to decide on sovereignty. Religious authorities has nothing to do with sovereignty. That's it. People and government do with sovereignty.